Howdy, amigos, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, and as always, the maestro over here that we've been laughing all afternoon long, Mr. Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? I hate it when you send me these videos moments before we're supposed to start recording, because then I can't stop giggling. What he sent me was the running of the bulls, you know, in Spain, and these morons, they get caught running down the street, and they're getting gored. I mean, some of them are getting flipped and tossed. And when they hit the ground, it knocks them smooth out.
I root for the Bulls. I'm sorry.
I do too.
Man, I'm sorry.
Absolutely. Quit screwing with them.
Yeah, leave them alone. It makes me laugh. And I know I shouldn't.
No, you should.
But I can't help it. I can't help it. If you're dumb enough to run around. Here's the reason I laugh is because I've taken a hooking before.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people around here have.
Yeah. My father, I grew up in rodeo pretty much my whole life, and then we were doing some stuff, and then Kyle and I would work there whenever we were young men and do some stuff. But yeah. I've taken hooking before by a pretty good sized animal, and it's not an enjoyable thing. It's a little bit of panic sets in. If you've never been attacked by an animal, you don't really understand what it's all about. And this is one of those deals going through it. A real good friend of my son's and all that, Chris Hansen, he actually has a fitness place here in town. Chris is a bullfighter. I think he actually went back and did a little bullfighting on it. But he's got some pretty cool videos. But I mean,
you got to explain to people bullfighting. Okay. Not like with the red cape.
Not like that. We're talking about with the bull riders. If you watch anything, folks, for those of you that aren't in the U.S. or maybe not even aware of it, if you go to the PBR, the PBR is Professional Bull Riders. And if you go and you look at this, there's all these, we call them bullfighters. They're rodeo clowns. But they're there to keep the bull riders safe. So if the bull throws the rider off and then doubles back to come get him, the clowns are there, the bullfighters are there to draw the bull's attention on them so the rider can then in turn get to safety, get to the fence, get somewhere else. So these guys intentionally put themselves in and out of harm's way all the time. If you really want to see what I'm talking about, one of my favorites that I grew up watching is the Kamikaze Kid. His name's Rob Smets, and that's S-M-E-T-S. Look up some videos of him. He's from California. This dude he's a five-time world champion bullfighter, Wrangler world champion bullfighter. You need to watch this guy. Pull him up on YouTube, Rob Smets, the Kamikaze Kid. You'll see what I'm talking about. Now, these guys, this is doing it up. What me and Kyle are watching are a bunch of drunks and a bunch of idiots out there running around with Mexican fighting bulls, and these bulls are putting a stamp on them in the middle of the street. And I can't help but laugh because you can legitimately see the terror in some of these people's eyes, and I get a chuckle out of it. So me and Kyle have been in this studio when we should have been doing work laughing hysterically.
Yeah, I mean, these people flock to Spain from all over the world to participate in this. I'm just like, I don't think that they know what they're getting into.
They don't.
I mean, clearly some of the people you can see are terrified.
Save yourself some money if that's what you're looking to do. Save yourself your travel expenses and all the time. Go down, go find your local, you know, rodeo grounds. Go talk to some kids in the FFA at the local high school. If you want to take a good hook, and I'm sure they can find some bulls for you, just jump over in the pen with them, run over there, slap one of them in the nose, run around till you fall down, let him put the stamp on you. And then that way you can save all that money for your travel, for your hospital bills.
I will say this, the bulls that are even in these films, though, they're very small bulls.
Well, they're the fighting bulls that they use over there in Mexico. They're smaller.
Spain. They're in Spain.
Yeah, Spain. Yeah, they're the fighting bulls. They're not made, they don't grow as large as the bulls that we use for bucking bulls. Yeah,
now, right, if you had some of those on the street, it would literally be killing people.
Well, and I just don't know that they could, also, those bulls, they can go a little bit longer, probably run more. Yeah, you're talking about something that's probably a 1,200-pound animal, that they're to 1,800-pound animal, bodacious. Yeah. Look him up. You want to see a bull, bodacious. Bodacious was retiring, guys. He almost killed Tuff Edelman in the NFR one year, caved his face in. Yeah, you want to see some really wicked stuff. Pull up Tuff Edelman versus Bodacious. Yeah, you'll see some. Or Gary Don West. Gary Don West got messed up by Bodacious, too. Yeah. Well, folks, to get off the laughing and the cutting up of this whole thing with the bulls, we're going to continue with the laughing. I've talked about this in the past, and we've discussed it numerous times. And I dropped this on Kyle, and y'all got to get a load of this. I brought up, and y'all remember, if y'all have listened to us, you remember that we've talked about whenever the guys broke the beard off the King Tut mask.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then they just kind of
tried to glue it on.
Oh, just tried to slap it on and this, all that. This comes from the AP. It says, Egyptian prosecutors have now ordered 8 museum workers to a disciplinary court for gross negligence. Now, the 3,300-year-old mask, whose beard was accidentally knocked off and hastily epoxied back on in 2014, was scratched and damaged during the amateurish repair work, and prosecutors said in a Sunday statement, implicated the then head of Egyptian Museum and the chief of the restoration department. And this is, here's what it says. It says, in an attempt to cover up the damage they inflicted, they used sharp instruments such as scalpels and metal tools to remove traces of adhesive on the mask, causing damage and scratches that remain. It said, citing an investigation, the eight now face fines and disciplinary measures, including dismissal. So basically what we're talking about is the softest substance, metal-wise, we're talking with gold, very soft, 3,300-year-old gold, something that you cannot repair. There's no cost. You mean there's no price you can put on the mask of King Tut, and they're just over scraping away on it. Just,
who are the morons they've hired to
just
take
working
care
away
of
this? On it, Kyle? That's all I'm doing.
You know what I'm saying? Who are the morons they've hired to take care of this? I mean, I'm thinking of the Three Stooges, and it's like they've messed up. They knocked the beard off, and now they're trying to put it back together, and it's actually making it worse. It's just like, leave it alone. Send it to somebody who knows what the hell they're doing. You're destroying history.
It's okay to say, "Oh, we screwed up. Don't touch no more of it." Well, it would have been easier to take your ass eating the minute you broke it.
I think
said,
that's exactly right. I think this guy's like, panicking. They're trying to fix it as fast as they can. And
nobody will know. You're like, nobody will know. It wasn't even on.
It was crooked.
Like, turned. It was not just crooked. It was offset and crooked. Yeah. So anyhow.
They should be prosecuted.
Yes. Well, it says a year ago that the museum, the conservator there was present at the time of the repair. And he told AP that epoxy had dried on the face of the mask and that a colleague used a spatula to remove it. Now, there was another person there says that the artifact that inspects it regularly said that he saw the scratches and said it was clear that they've been made by a tool used to scrape off the epoxy. Now, both of those men actually told their stories totally anonymously, though, because they were afraid of repercussions.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what it is. We pretty much hit the nail on the head. Is those guys didn't want to get in trouble, so they were just like, let's just try to fix. You're telling me you're not going to notice that?
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to notice King Tut's beard all broke off like that? But anyway, so people are fixing to get in some serious trouble for it.
Crazy. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it seems that I've recently been proved 100% correct about Planet X. Now, many years ago, I read some books about by the late Zachariah Sitchin, and he talked and he prophesied about this Nibiru or Planet X. And Cam, as well as everybody else, thought I was crazy.
I still think he's crazy.
You know, if you're not familiar with Planet X or Nibiru, it's this planet, it's a supposed planet, that's on a huge orbit that only shows up, you know, like every 16,000 years or so. And that's where the Anunnaki came from. Remember? And they jumped over here and they seeded this planet. And that's our ancestors. That, you know, that's where we come from, is this Nibiru, 10th planet. I mean, that's why Eddie Bravo named it 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu.
That's right.
Well, it turns out it's real. Listen to this.
Thousands of years ago, the skygazers of the classical world knew about six planets: Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. Thanks to the invention of the telescope, Uranus was discovered in 1781. But discrepancies in its orbit meant that something was tugging at it. Sure enough, that something turned out to be Neptune. Ever since, scientists have wondered if there might be yet another planet in our solar system, sometimes called Planet X. Now, astronomers have strong evidence for one. A planet roughly the size of Neptune, with a mass 10 times the Earth's, and a thick atmosphere of hydrogen and helium. Just as Neptune was predicted based on its influence on Uranus, the evidence for Planet X is indirect. Astronomers observe six small solar system objects and notice they come closest to the Sun in a unique configuration. There's only a 1 in 15,000 chance that this orbital clustering is a coincidence. It is much more likely that Planet X has shepherded the six objects into their orbits. This explodes our conception of the solar system, because Planet X would loop around the Sun unimaginably far away in a strange elliptical orbit. So far away that it takes 15,000 years to make the trip. By comparison, Neptune's orbital period is 165 years. Of course, not everyone will be convinced of Planet X until we have visual proof. Researchers are now using one of the world's largest telescopes, Subaru, in Hawaii, and they say they have a reasonable chance of finding Planet X in the next 5 years. Once spotted, we can welcome Planet X as the ninth planet in our solar system.
So see, our solar system appears to have a new ninth planet. Now remember, Pluto was the ninth planet, and then it was demoted.
To just like a moon.
It's a dwarf planet, they call it. It's not really a planet. Well, now they found a new planet, and they're calling this the new ninth planet. And they says that it's nearly the size of Neptune. Now, it's still unseen, but it orbits the sun every 15,000 years, which is exactly what Zachariah Sitchin was talking about. Now, sometime in our solar system's infancy, about 4.5 billion years ago, they say that the giant planet was knocked out of its planet-forming region near the sun and was slowed down by gas over time, and it eventually settled into a gigantic elliptical orbit where it still lurks today. Now, two astronomers made the discovery, and one is Konstantin Batygin, and the other one is Mike Brown, and they are both of the California Institute of Technology, or Caltech, in Pasadena. And they say that they've prepared for the inevitable skepticism with detailed analysis of the orbits of these distant objects. They've been using months and months of computer simulations because they know when they found this that people were going to laugh at them. They're like, yeah, right, Nibiru, right, Planet X, right?
Yeah.
They even had outside scientists check their calculations and findings, and they opened it up for peer review, and their findings are 100% correct. Now, this new ninth planet, Cam, it's about six times the size of planet Earth, so it's not that small. And they both know that the only real way for people to really buy into it and really believe it is when Planet X itself appears within a telescope viewfinder. So right now they're encouraging astronomers, both professional or an amateur, whatever, to help them try and find it, because so far they don't have an exact fix on where it is. So if you're not following, they haven't visually seen Planet X. They know it's there because they're going off of gravitational evidence.
So they know something's pulling the gravitational change.
Right. They can tell something large is pulling on distant objects like Pluto, which is now a dwarf planet. And, of course, they found another dwarf planet a couple years ago, Sedna, which is also a dwarf planet. And actually, Brown, one of the scientists that found Planet X, is actually the one who's responsible for demoting Pluto from a planet to a dwarf planet. And he wrote about it in a book called How I Killed Pluto.
Him and I are going to have a discussion. He's leave Pluto alone.
Right? I mean, leave it there. So what if it's small? But anyways, they've discovered this Planet X. And, I don't know if it's the exact same one Sitchin was talking about, but there is a planet that has like a huge 15,000 elliptical.
There's something that's changing the gravitational pulls out there that they've not laid an eye on it yet. Well, and so there's something out there.
And they're theorizing that perhaps some of the natural catastrophes that have befallen Earth is when this thing's come closer to our orbit or the sun or whatever. Who knows? We know that Jupiter itself, because of the gravity, sweeps away a lot of the comets and stuff that would otherwise hit Earth or sucked into Jupiter's gravity. So, like Graham Hancock always says, thank Jupiter.
Yes.
Because without that, we'd be in a lot of trouble. Maybe this planet, although nowhere near the size of Jupiter, might also have some other effects, or it might actually clean up some of the loose debris that's floating in our solar system. Now, many people want to know, what the heck, what's the name of it? You're like, are they really calling it Planet X? And he said, no, that for right now, they're just calling it Planet X because they don't have a name for it. And they said, one reporter asked him, do you think you should be named after you two, that the scientists had discovered it? And he said, no, that all the other planets like Neptune and everything, they were never named by the discoverers. And it's a good thing because he says it's bigger than one person. It shouldn't be named after me. It's like finding a new continent on Earth. I mean, it's a huge discovery.
Yeah.
And they think that there could be other things. So maybe this planet is on a 15,000-year orbit. Could there be another planet that's on, say, a 40,000-year orbit? Or maybe one that's on a 500,000-year orbit? I don't know. Like, where does it stop? I mean, since we've started demoting Pluto and finding these other dwarf planets, we've been finding a lot of other stuff out there. Is the story of Nibiru correct? Is that where the Anunnaki reside? And when they come back this next time, and remember the King's List with all the names? Mm-hmm. Is all that real?
It's going to look like Stargate when they come swinging back around.
I don't know.
That'd be crazy.
Nibiru, people.
Nibiru. Yeah.
Look it up on YouTube. You'll find 1 million videos on it. And I would say almost every one of them is complete garbage and made up.
I don't know. Still, it's entertaining. Yeah. It is a great look, but who knows? I mean, they've found it now. Let's see what happens this fall. Let's see what we can figure out. Before we go to break, I've got a really wild story I'm going to tell you. Kyle, and I didn't know anything, but this comes, of course, from our favorite cryptozoology news. Ooh. There's a couple in Northern Ireland. They see Bigfoot.
In Ireland?
Yes. says two people claim they saw an ape-like creature in a small wooded area of Northern Ireland. Caroline Breen, a 63-year-old woman working as a pet sitter in Glenwary, told Cryptozoology News that she and her husband were walking some of the local dogs in Ballyboley Forest when the alleged beast showed up. We approached a small patch of dead trees one day when we caught sight of something crouched behind the bushes, she explains. We thought at first it was a human, but as it raised its head in the air, we saw it. The dogs got agitated.
Don't mind me. You guys got any toilet paper?
Don't look over here. What are you doing over there, Smokey? This is from, says the summer of 98 when this went down. Now, Breen says her husband walked towards the creature, and that's when it started growling at him.
Yeah, it was a growling or straight.
Says, I told him to step back. He thought it was a chimpanzee or something. A himpanzee.
Yeah.
And he got closer to within 15 feet or so, and it was then that it reared up on its legs. Odor?
Is that when he noticed the wet dog odor?
You'll like this. It was tall and carrying a big stick. Said the purported creature then reportedly smashed the stick against a tree and took off at high speed. Now, she says that it all lasted. All this took place in about 4 minutes. And that the creature was described as having a chimpanzee-like face, but with a broader nose, and it was covered in dark brown-black fur, much like what we discussed last week when people were seeing these things.
Well, yeah, it was pissed off. I mean, the thing was just in the woods trying to use the restroom, and it's being disturbed. Of course it would get mad. Wouldn't you get mad?
She recalls it being 8 feet tall.
Whoa.
She says, I don't know if this was a Bigfoot, but my husband didn't think we got these types of things in Ireland.
I'll tell you what, though.
That's when you need Conor McGregor with you, so he can put the stamp on that thing.
If I'm walking in the woods and I see something crouched over, you know, doing something.
Going
you know,
number two over there behind the trees.
8 foot tall. I don't think I'm just going to bebop up to it. What up, partner? No.
Well, you couldn't tell it's crouched down. Mm. But when it stood up, wouldn't you turn screaming like a, oh, and just run away?
For sure.
That's when you go number two in your pantalones.
That's right. Well, stick with us, folks. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Cam, it's that time of year again. It's the time of the year where we go through our emails and we start pulling out all the stories that people send us. You know, we always ask at the end of every show almost for people to share their experiences, to send us links and then their stories and things like that. Even personal experiences are my favorite. And we have to go back through sometimes and pull some out to read and share with everybody. So that's what we're going to do today. Cam, you've selected a few, and I've got a few here. And we're going to get into that. What do you think about when people share their stories? You like that?
I love it. I love it. And the main reason is I like the fact that a lot of people, and we, like we said, we get a lot of emails and people send us all these stories, but it's fun to know that it lets everybody know that they're not alone. That if you have something strange happen to you and people start thinking, oh man, you know, I wish, am I going crazy? And then you start hearing these stories and other people are sharing them and you start finding out you're not, man. Of course, you may already be crazy, but that's beside the point. But it's one of those things that you realize that you're like, hey, other people have had this happen. This is not just a one-off thing. Other people are seeing these crazy things. So, I don't know. I kind of like sharing it to let everybody kind of, you know, realize you're not alone.
Well, and I like to hear the stories where it's not something I just read in a book, but it's actually a listener of ours, somebody that, you know, we kind of have a friendship with that has actually had this experience. And I also like what you're saying is I like it when other people hear the show. And, you know, we assume because we talk about these subjects and a lot of the fans of the show talk about these subjects and are very knowledgeable. I have to say our fans seem to be very knowledgeable.
Yes.
But there's always going to be, you gotta realize that there are going to be newcomers, people that are not familiar with this show, and they may not be familiar with the things we talk about, and they may have heard a story about the Hat Man or something like that, the Slender Man, for the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be like, holy cow, that's what I saw when I was 13. So I love it when you get stories like that.
Yes.
In fact, I think that we've had a couple emails where people were like, oh my God, I didn't know that that was a thing until I heard it on your show. So let's get into some of these stories. Now, this first one is from Lance, and he said, I've only had one possible old hag experience in my life. I was in my early 30s, and it was in the early 2000s. I was kind of old, I thought, for an old hag, because this is usually experienced by somebody much younger in age. My wife and I were camping after a hard day of hiking and rock climbing and the Daniel Boone National Forest in Kentucky. It was old frontier and old Civil War country. That night, we quickly fell asleep in our tent, as we were exhausted. We were chemistry-free, other than a couple of cheap beers apiece. At approximately 3 or 4 a.m., I was shocked by an incredibly vivid dream that burst into my dream vision. I was very aware that I was asleep and dreaming, but I also was very aware of how I was oriented in my tent. I was aware of where my wife lay and how she was asleep. Also, how my tent was situated in my particular campsite. I knew where the campfire was, which was to the north. I knew where my car was parked, where the entrance road, and I also knew where the ranger station was. I knew where the roadside ditches and underbrush and all of the general geography of the entire nearby area. I could see it all, as if from outside of my body, and from both within and above my tent, but simultaneously. My point of view was hovering, but moving around for different vantage points. It reminds me of that fancy camera work from the cable pulley-driven cameras that fly around above the action of today's football games. Then, suddenly, the vision of the geography around us melted and morphed into what I instantly knew was the same place, but different in appearance. I instinctively knew this was the same place, but in a much earlier time. The campgrounds and the road were gone. What was currently thick woods and brush was replaced with rolling hills and the occasional and scattered stands of trees. Very far off in the distance, I could see two men glowing fuzzy white. Bright enough to obscure any details of them, but I just knew that they were from a long time ago. They were very tiny at such a distance, but I knew that they were men. Suddenly, my vision of them zoomed in so that I was face to face with them in a fraction of a second, as if I were unwillingly yanked across the distance to them, rather than them to me. They were both looking straight into my face, in what seemed closer than normal conversational spacing. They both turned their faces and looked off to their left or my right. The glowing man in front of me to my right raised a hand and pointed it in the direction they were looking and asked me, "Do you want to see a dead body?" Indicating where he was pointing. To say the very least, this was shockingly creepy. Almost instantly, I am again aware that I am in my tent, still dreaming, I would guess, but spared the sight of the dead body. My vision now, however, was from my own eyes, from their normal point of view, from where I lay on my back in my tent. With my sudden jolting return to my current location in my tent, I saw my chest, legs, and feet as I lay on my back as one might normally do. However, there is another body glowing bright and fuzzy white, just as the men in the past distance. The glowing body was taking great care to position itself precisely so as to lay his body into mine. Starting with the feet, legs, and pelvis, they seemed to merge into my body for a perfect matching fit. It then laid so that its left shoulder and arm merged exactly into mine, then its chest into mine. I watched in horror as it placed its right arm and shoulder to merge precisely onto mine, as I laid there, unable to move or protest. When the very last of him filled my body's form, I felt my body explode into a rigid spasm of body-wide contractions or convulsions. My back was arched like a bridge. I wanted to scream, "Get out!" But my chest and lungs refused to expand and take the breath I needed so desperately. I thought if I could just get my breath, I could yell loud enough to break or stop whatever was happening to me. I tried, and succeeded to take tiny sips of air until I had the breath that I needed to scream and break the convulsion and make what felt like an invasion of my body to finally end. Funny thing is, this whole time, I was aware of my wife sleeping only inches away, and that if I yelled, "Get out!" that it would certainly frighten and freak her out, and I'd have that to deal with, even more frightening. So I decided to yell, "Stop it!" instead, and I did just that. That very instant, the entire event was over. No body-wrenching spasms, no glowing form from within me, no more flying around the countryside, just me and my wide-eyed wife bolting upright right next to me. It was over. I told her I had a bad dream, deciding not to go into detail at the moment. I insisted that she lay in a physical contact with me for the rest of the early morning. I refused to allow myself to go to sleep until I could see the orange glow to the east that was the soon-to-rise morning sun. For the next 3 days, my body was racked with incredibly sore muscles, especially my torso, as if I had done 1,000,001 sit-ups or push-ups. I could easily write this off as a typical old hag experience if it were not for the convulsions. Typically, old hag syndrome involves just the opposite, a flaccid paralysis. We somewhat affectionately refer to it as my possession or my abduction, although it still scares the crap out of me. Just writing this has my gut tense and knotted, and breathing fast and short. I never went back to that part of the National Forest. Thanks again. Keep up the great work. I love your show. Cheers, Lance. So that's a bizarre story, right?
That's more than bizarre.
I like how he describes, you know, what is that? Astral traveling? Is that what they call it?
Where astral you're like projection
flying
or
above yourself and flying through the countryside. And he's
it's like something caught him out of body and decided, oh, well, here's an empty parking spot.
Yeah, when it merges with
right?
him.
Yeah.
Or is he seeing like his spirit merge right back with his physical body?
I don't know.
I mean, because you've heard the stories of like when people are near death experiences or even ones that, you know, similar traumatic events where they say that they're like up in the top of the hospital room looking down on mm-hmm. the guys performing yeah. the surgery on him. And then they like come back. So is that like he was actually able to witness his spirit being put into his body? I don't know.
I think it was something trying to steal the parking spot.
Yeah, you think
yeah,
so?
Yeah, that's what I think. I don't think it was anything nice. It sounded like he didn't get tangled up with anything too nice at that point.
That is so creepy.
It is. It's very, dude, it's any of that stuff when you start talking about like your sleep where you feel completely vulnerable. Because when you go to your bed, you feel like you're going to be okay. You feel all right.
You're supposed to, right?
Exactly. You're supposed to. But it doesn't always work out that way. I got one for you here. Now, you're going to get a kick out of this. Now, a lot of the stories that we get, people don't want their names read. They may use a few other names in the story, but they just prefer. So we don't even try. So we're just going to go with this one. This is a pretty strange one that got emailed to me. Now, get a load of this. It says, about a year ago, I started dating someone who worked as a state park ranger who I'll call Jay. Jay lived on the state park property in a 2-bedroom house tucked in the woods. We set the alarm and settled into bed around midnight with Jay's 2 dogs between us and a 3rd dog crated beside the bed. Well, for some reason, I couldn't fall asleep. So I lay listening to the dog snoring and the deafening silence surrounding us while Jay slept. And then it started. A repetitive bouncing sound of some sort was coming from outside the window, less than a few feet from where I was laying on the bed. As if someone was dribbling a basketball on cement. The pace would speed up and slow down. The sound would become louder and softer. And this continued for well over 2 hours. Now, I wholeheartedly wanted to believe what I was hearing were simply sounds of nature, so I ignored it. But next came the creaks in the walls. Now, I know that house makes sounds, but this was unlike anything I heard before. These sounds started in the hallway as very, very faint creaks. The creaks became louder as they reached Jay's bedroom. And would happen on one wall at a time, going counterclockwise around the room until it eventually reached the wall beside me. The creak in the wall beside me was so loud I jumped, and the 2 dogs jolted from their sleep. All the while, I'm still hearing a bouncing ball outside the window, and I'm getting more nervous by the minute. And then at 3 a.m., I hear it. I hear the most ungodly, terrifying growl shrieking from the center of the house. Now, it was so loud that Jay flies off the bed, grabs a shotgun hanging on the wall adjacent to the bed, and shouts, "Is somebody in the house?" and takes off down the hallway towards the sound. The dogs are going berserk, and I'm in tears, absolutely beside myself, pleading with Jay that it was not a person. Well, Jay comes back into the bedroom after not finding an intruder, of course, or anything of the sort, and says it must have been one of the dogs. I tell him, certainly not the dogs, as I was awake the entire night, and the dogs were asleep in the room with us. Well, maybe an animal got caught underneath the house. Yeah, maybe, I say. Somehow, after I calmed down a bit, I drifted off to sleep. The next thing I know, Jay is on top of me with his hands around my throat and the meanest look on his face, jerking my head back and forth, suffocating me and hurting me. I can't make any sound, and I'm struggling to push Jay away, and that's when I wake up. It was all a vivid dream. Jay is asleep beside me. And in the morning, we walk into the den to find the heater turned on full blast. It was in the middle of the summer. Jay only uses it during winter months, as it's the original furnace, and it's actually quite tricky to operate. I'm convinced something in that house did not want me there, and that growl will forever haunt me. But a few months following the growling incident, Jay had a meeting one night for a few hours, leaving me at his house with his three dogs. After he left, I decided to run to the convenience store and pick up some wine. Jay prefers the dogs be crated when left alone in the house, so I crated them and set the alarm. When I drove back up to the house, I could hear the dogs barking loudly and wildly. I pulled open the storm door to find all three had gotten out of their crates and were at the door. Another night I stayed over, Jay awoke in the morning with a black eye and scratches covering his face. Now, he joked about it with his friends, but we both knew something probably more sinister was happening. Now, the land the park is located on was colonized in the late 1700s. It was then resettled into a recreation center in the 1930s, with many of those original buildings remaining intact. And I often wonder if the deep history of the land holds the answers to these unexplained events that's confounded us. Now, how creepy is that one?
Yeah. What could that be?
My question about this whole thing is what she talks about. Waking up, she feels like she's being choked. She sees Jay on top of her.
Yeah.
Bats it off, pops up. It was just a dream. Now, was it all a dream? Was every bit of this a dream? Because it doesn't sound like it. The way she tells the story, it all happened at first. She dripped off to sleep. Then she woke herself up. Was it all a dream? That's the strangest part about the whole story. I'm assuming from the way it reads that this all happened, the sounds, the bouncing ball and all that stuff. Or did it? You know, did it not happen? Was it all that way? Or, like we talked about, is this something that is an evil spirit? Is something that's not quite right in this place that doesn't want her there? But then again, it's talking about wakes up with scratches on your face and a black eye. I believe I'd be finding a new place to stay.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those deals. How horrible would it be to actually have a house that was haunted? You're actually going through all this, and that's the job. The house comes with the job, and you have to stay there. Like, you couldn't afford to go move someplace else.
Right.
So you're kind of stuck there to deal with that. What would you do? You know, I mean, I'm listening to that, and I'm like, just like she's talking about, we laughed about the dogs had gotten out of the crates, out of the kennel. That's probably not something that's going to happen that a dog could do by itself. Now, I've seen them, you know, open up certain ones, but a lot of them, you're going to have thumbs in order to make these things operate.
The scariest thing to me of the story is the fact that she could hear intently this horrible, otherworldly growling. She knows it wasn't the dogs.
What about?
I mean, that's got to be chilling.
The creaking, where, you know, it's almost like you can hear footsteps as it's getting near you, like you're sleeping upstairs in a creaky old house, and you can hear somebody come in the door, and nobody's supposed to be in the house, and the footsteps come up the stairs, and you know they're coming right where you're at. That's the what kind of give me the chills. Is yeah, because you're like, I'm laying there, and I hear it outside, then I hear it creaking through the house, and then it goes around the walls, and then it comes to me. Yeah, dude, that's a little unnerving.
Scary. Check these out. This first one comes from a man named Larry, and he was talking about how he had recently been listening to our third Man Factor episode, And it made him think about an event which happened to him 10 years ago. And he states, I was at a light in my car, and the light had just turned green. Now, my five-month-old car, brand new, stalled out when I hit the gas. Now, this was an automatic, so it's not like I accidentally popped the clutch or anything. I reached for the ignition to turn the engine back on, and a car came screeching through the intersection and bounced off the light fixture. Had my brand new car not stalled, I would have been T-boned in the driver's side door. Now, as a side note, the car never stalled again in the 4 years that I owned it. Now, I don't know if this is a third man or what, but it was similar to the story that you guys mentioned on that episode. Thanks, Larry. Now, I remember the story we talked about. I think it was one that you read on that episode where the woman was driving and something happened. I don't remember what distracted her for just a second. And if that hadn't happened, she would have been killed probably by that semi that come through the intersection. This sounds like a similar thing. He's got a brand new car, automatic transmission.
Mm-hmm.
What would cause it to stall? And it never stalled ever again, right then. And then this guy's in this other car comes blowing through that intersection. I mean, it would have smacked right into him.
Yeah. You could say it's third man. You could say it's guardian angel. You could...
Time slip.
It's hard to believe. Look, doing what we've done for going on, 2.5, 3 years, what we're talking about, this September will be 3 years. After you do enough of this and you talk to enough people and all that, you get to the, you boil it down to where you don't hardly believe in a coincidence anymore. It's not just like, oh, that just accidentally happened that way, or, oh, it just so happened to stall at this one time, and then you can't repeat. It's hard to want to believe into that stuff. You know what I mean? It's almost harder for me to believe in a coincidence than it is for me to believe that something actually interacted with it.
Yeah.
Something, and like I said, when I say interacted, I don't know what, I have any idea what kind of, that's just the only, you know, words you could use, but that's not normal. And it hasn't happened since.
No.
Didn't happen before. It didn't happen since. It just so happened to happen at the exact right time. That's not a coincidence. Something was, some kind of something had its hand in that. That's no matter crazy. What you believe. Yeah. Something had that.
I like it. Here's another one. This one's from Deborah, and she's from Melbourne, Australia. And she stated that, I grew up in a very strange house that was not that old, but myself and some friends were over visiting. And several times we had some very unusual experiences in that house, and so much so that it just became everyday life, and I rarely even think about it now. Needless to say, birthdays and slumber party invites were highly sought after at my house because people love to spend the night to get terrified and scared by things that go bump in the night. I'm also a healthy skeptic and a lover of science, so when my friends called my house haunted, I always said that I had no proof that there were dead people. But I believed that ghosts may actually be humans living in another time or even dimension. I have to admit, living in that house as a child scared the crap out of me until I eventually became desensitized to it all. I was recently listening to one of your time slip shows, and I suddenly had a flashback to an evening when I was 10 years old. Now, this was back in 1979. Now, Aussie suburbs are basically identical to your average USA suburb. Separate houses with a front and backyard and a driveway and a garage on one side of the front of the house. My best friend's mom was driving my friend and I to my house on a Friday evening for a sleepover at my house. It was twilight, but it was still quite light. It was around 6 p.m. Now, my friend's mom coasted past the end of the driveway and said as we glanced up the drive, "Oh, your mom's not home yet." At the same time, I said, "Oh, my mom's not home yet." We all just agreed that she must be a little bit late from work. It's no big deal. My mom's car was not parked in the driveway in front of the old garage door. We couldn't even open the decrepit door, and we never parked our vehicles in our garage. The lights were on in the house, so I knew that my 13-year-old brother was obviously home. Now, this was back in 1979, back when kids ran free and were allowed to hang out without parental supervision. We still all just jumped out. We said goodbye to my friend's mom, and we walked to the driveway to walk past the garage and go around to the back door. We were both looking at our feet as we trudged up the gravel drive, chatting about the usual 10-year-old girl stuff. Suddenly, we both walked into the bumper of my mom's car that was now sitting, as it should have been, in front of the garage door, and it was obscuring the view up into the backyard. We were astonished. To get past the car, we now had to squeeze single file between the car and my house. We discussed how we both didn't see any of this car previously, and the driveway was completely empty. We couldn't understand how me and my friend and her mother had not only not seen my mother's car, but we each even commented on her not being home and the car being missing. My mom was inside cooking when we got to the back door, and we both just forgot about it, as 10-year-olds typically can. Now, I've had other experiences where objects of various size have disappeared and then reappeared within minutes, but the car was the largest object to ever do this. Suddenly, decades later, I'm thinking that maybe it was a time slip of some type. The mysteries of that house and my assumption about mismatches of time seems to be more feasible than seeing dead people or other kooky, spooky explanations. I think it was Einstein who said that all moments in time are happening simultaneously. The car was always not there, and yet it was always there. I've had so many stories about weird stuff in that house that it would probably bore both of you. Hilariously, 30 years later, my mom mentioned in passing one day that she also had similar experiences. Thankfully, I eventually got to leave that house for the last time, and I moved out into my own home. Since then, all the creepy stuff stopped, so it seemed to be associated with that house, luckily for me. Keep the great podcast up. Your friend, Deborah. What do you think of that? I mean, I like the fact that I can imagine there are two 10-year-old girls that are going to have a sleepover. Her mom's friend's mom's driving them there. Her friend's mom pulls up, and they clearly says, oh, look, your mom's not. Of course, they say mom. I read it the way they read it. That's what they call it in Australia. Your mom's not home. And then she's like, oh, yeah, my mom's not home. No big deal. There's lights on in the house. My brother's there. He's 13. You know, like she mentions, in 1979, parents didn't care as much.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, okay. She'll be home soon, I'm sure. Then they walk up the driveway and they run into the car and it's there. And they go around and her mom's inside cooking. I mean, that's a time slip.
It has to
be. I love the stories of time slips.
It has to be. What else could it be?
I don't know. I have no explanation for such crazy stories.
Well, here's one. This isn't so much as a time slip. I don't really know.
You don't know how to categorize it?
Yeah, I don't even know how to categorize this. This comes from a woman named Mary, and it makes me think of the movie Cat's Eye. And I'm just going to read it to you. It says, this is something I've kept to myself and only shared with a few friends. It isn't something that I go around telling people about. But last year, during one night, I was staying up late watching TV in the living room, like I normally do. And anyways, my cat always joins me and lays down on the floor on the other side of the living room. Well, after a while, and all of a sudden, a ball comes rolling slowly out from under the couch I was sitting on and rolling towards my cat, and it didn't stop until it reached my cat. I didn't know what to think, but it creeped me out to the core. It says, everyone else in the house was sleeping and in bed, and I was the only one awake, and regardless of that fact, there's a wall behind the couch so nobody can get behind it. Well, of course, I called it a night and went to bed, but I'll never forget it. That isn't a secret that weird things have always happened in all three of the houses that I've lived in. So I don't know if it's me or just another family member, or maybe we're just unlucky with the choice of homes. So that's one of those, real quick, it's one of those, it's little things. They don't always have to be big things, people. They could be little things. Now imagine you're sitting in your chair in here in your house. And you're just kicking it by yourself early one morning, late one night, however you want to look at it. And a ball comes rolling out. Now, how would it do that? Look, it's under a couch. I understood if there's like some kind of a hole and it just happened to fall out. And you know what it would have to do for everything to be just right for a ball to roll slowly out from under a couch and all the way over to your cat across the floor?
It's creepy. Like,
you can't do that. It doesn't just, it's not a coincidence like we talked about. There's no such thing. This doesn't happen this way.
I try to put myself in their shoes. You know, I can imagine watching TV and then all of a sudden you see it rolling and you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Like, what? Did I kick that? What was that? Yeah. That's what I love about it. It's something small. Like we always talk about. It's those little bitty things, you know, that it just kind of pops out and you're like, what? What was that? Where did this? Yeah, I better go to bed now. Maybe I'm seeing things, but you know, but who knows? What keeps it all caught up underneath there? Was it? I don't know. But and that was it. Just want to say, here you go, cat.
Yeah,
a little ball action.
Well, you had mentioned the movie Cat's Eye. Well, sticking with that, check this one out. This is another email that was sent to us. It's very similar to Cat's Eye as well. Now, this was sent to us by Candy. And she says, first of all, hello, guys. First, I'd like to say that I really enjoy your stories and I enjoy your podcast. With that said, here's a story I hope you'll enjoy. Now, this was told to me by a nice lady that I had hired a few years ago. Sometime in the 1980s, she and her sister were attending a secondary boarding school on an Indian reserve. Now, they shared the same bedroom at the time, with their beds only being a couple feet apart. Now, one night, she woke up to see a little, one-foot-tall man wearing a little shirt, wearing little pants, a black belt, and a pointed hat. And he slowly and quietly came out of their closet. Now, he climbed up on her sister's bed and then climbed up onto her chest and leaned very close to her mouth and nose. He was just sitting on her sister's chest, smelling her breath while she slept. Now, after a few minutes, he pulled a little knife or something sharp out of his belt and made an L-shaped slit in the screen in the window and crawled out. Now, the next morning, thinking I had just had a bad dream, I went and checked the window, and sure enough, there was a little slit, exactly where she had seen the little guy cut it out. I hope you guys enjoyed this story. Keep up the good work, Candy. Dude!
Damn!
I mean, how creepy is that?
Dude, what the heck is that?
I don't know. I mean, is that... Look, I'd like to think...
The stories of the little people are my favorite, man.
I'd like to think that somebody had just actually seen the movie Cat's Eye and then they were just relaying this.
Embellished
and
a little.
Passing it off as their own. But, you know,
but
we've heard several stories of people seeing these small, you know, little thing, little people.
When
like
in
that.
Brazil, there was that alleged picture of that one, like a video of it. Or remember, like it looks like it runs through their house. It's like, you know, it's maybe only 8 or 9 inches tall.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Where it was like captured footage like at a birthday party or something.
And it like runs out from underneath like a little, I don't know, a little table or something, then runs and runs over there by the corner of the, like in a little room.
Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah, I think that was in Brazil. I got one more here. Check this out. Now, this one was sent to us by Catherine, and I really enjoyed it. And it kind of goes with the little people and stuff. It's pretty cool. She said, I've been going back through your back catalogs of some of your other older episodes, and I just listened to one of your episodes on fairy folk. And I thought I'd write you about an interesting encounter I had. I don't get to share these stories with many people, but I figure you two won't think I'm too crazy.
And you're right.
I work as a ranger in Montana, and a few times a year I get to do long wilderness loops, traversing off trail through some pretty rough country, talking to hikers and keeping an eye on things. Anyways, my first season, I didn't know the country very well. And on our final day's hike, my partner and I became distracted, probably by the thought of showers or maybe hamburgers. We got turned around. According to the map, we should have been leaving the traverse section of our trip and picking up a trail. But where we were, there was no trail. We checked the map again, and we took a compass bearing. We were going the correct direction, but still... no trail. We wandered about for somewhere near 2 hours, not going far enough to get truly lost, but also not finding the path that we knew should be here. Finally, in frustration, we stopped for a water break. My partner hiked down to the lakeside to pump some fresh water, and I stood on a rock and scanned the boulder field, looking for any signs of the trail. I scanned the drainage once more. Nothing. As my eyes came back for a second pass, one of the boulders, maybe 30 feet away from me, turned into a small, crouching, human-shaped figure. and then back into a boulder. Boulder, person, boulder. It happened so quickly that I could not make out any of the details. Just whatever it had been that had been crouching there, it looked like a smallish human. I stood there staring at that big-ass rock and knowing for sure that I had just seen what I thought I had seen. It should have freaked me out at the time, but it didn't. After standing there, mouth agape for a few moments, I walked over to the boulder to inspect it. I was thinking that if something had shown itself to me, there must have been a reason. Sure enough, behind that rock was a faint patch of bare earth. It was the beginning of the trail that we had all been searching for. I called my partner back and we made the hike out safely. When he asked me how I'd found the trail, I didn't bother to tell him because he's very conservative and it probably would have scared him. Not sure if what I saw was one of the Fae or another being of some kind, but every year when I make that hike, I say thank you as I walk past that boulder. Anyway, thought you would find it neat with your interest in little people. Thanks, Catherine. So,
I love that.
Crazy, right? Reminds me of the trolls on Frozen. Remember the little...
What it makes me think of is what we talked about is you've almost got to be, like we've always say, you kind of got to get dialed in order to see that. And maybe for a split second, they were able to peer through that veil and see it. And it was like, oh, I thought they were past me already. I got to wait for them to get by. You know what I mean?
Yeah, was it like, that or was it something, you know, trying to give her a, you know, making sure she saw that that's where the path was? So I'm going to let her see me for a second and then go back. I don't know, man. That's
I love it.
I love the story. No, I love the story. I'm saying
love it.
That's crazy. I love stories like that.
Yes.
Thank you so much for everybody sending on the stories. I really appreciate it. If you want to send your own stories, of course, you can email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can just go to our website, expandedperspectives.com, and you can go to the contact tab at the top and you can send us your story. We really enjoy it. If you might be lucky one day and you might be hear it read here. But we appreciate them. We read every one of them. Sometimes we don't read them on the air, but we do read every one of them. And I really enjoy it. We're compiling them all, actually. Because, you know, who knows? Maybe one day in a couple years from now, we can make a whole book and nothing but, you know, listener stories.
Yeah.
Pretty neat. I really enjoy it. Well, let's take a break, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Folks, we're back. We almost got away without doing one more. Rick sent us one, and I've been wanting to talk about this since I got it, and we haven't had it long, and this is just, it's a really interesting thing. You're gonna enjoy this. I don't even know where to go with it, because it makes me think of what you were just talking about, what we just discussed with the little boulder people or whatnot. Is it's almost like there's something out there that's, you know, maybe it's just checking in on you. Maybe it's keeping its eye on you. But I want you to listen to this. It says, all of this is 100% true. My dad and brother have lake houses right next to each other in upstate New York on Lake Ontario. They're in a very secluded area on a peninsula. And you can only get there by boat or by walking down a mile-long path deep through a forest. And that sounds like an awesome place to live.
Yeah.
But it says, one winter morning, we were all getting ready to go out and play after a night of heavy snowfall. My uncle looked out the window toward the path we used to get back and forth from the parking lot to our houses. As he looked out, he saw a pair of the eeriest, strangest-looking deer he or I had ever seen. He said they had all-gray fur, long, dark, almond-shaped eyes that stared intently, and their antlers were two long, jagged horns protruding straight out from their skull. Now, these deer were like none either of us had seen. My grandmother walked outside to take pictures of them, and after she snapped a few pictures, they seemed to just walk away. The two deer silently strode into the woods, not making a single sound. They did not even have to hop the slightest bit through the foot of snow that was on the ground. Now, what makes this even stranger and actually startling has to do with the pictures. After looking back, neither of the deer showed up in any of the pictures taken. The camera was fine, as everything was there, but where the deer were. Everything behind them was clearly shown. Now, we walked over to where they had been standing, and no more snow had fallen. This was a minute or two after they'd walked away. There was no tracks. The snow appeared to be untouched. Now, a few years later, my cousins and I were walking down that path, and we all got a strange feeling that I can only describe as dread. It was like the feeling you get when you're sitting outside the principal's office waiting to be called in. We looked over and saw two deer just like the ones before. Now, the forest floor around the path was covered in leaves and dry brush, but we did not hear them walking around. The two deer were pacing, watching us. At least that's how I felt at the time, and I still feel that to this day. Both of the deer simultaneously turned their heads the second we looked at them. Now, we exchanged an eerie eye contact for around 10 seconds or so, but it could have been longer for all I know. It just felt so odd. Then they turned and proceeded to walk over the hill out of sight. We didn't hear them walk away. It's like they were floating above the ground. Now, this was in the early 2000s, and they have not been seen since. But this is still a topic of conversation for our family to this day. What was that? Is that fey folk that's just hanging out there? Like, because, okay, so what I'm picturing is like the grandmother, and maybe, you know, got a digital camera, goes out there, right, going to snap a few photos, tick, 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 tick. They come back in. The way it sounds is she took the photos and all that, then they went out to walk over to see where the deer were, and they were like, well, there's no tracks. Maybe this wasn't where they were at.
Right.
You know? And maybe that's, maybe it was that simple. Maybe it was just as simple as they didn't, maybe they were further away and they didn't go right where they thought they were. It's a lot of snow. It's a lot of trees. Who knows? Maybe it's easily played off. But when you go back and you look at the pictures and the deer aren't there, but everything else is clearly photographed except those deer, then it starts making you wonder.
Yeah.
You're like, what is this?
What is that?
And why do they look so strange?
I don't know.
That's really wild.
That's kind of scary, actually.
Yes.
Very, very cool. Well, thanks for everybody being here at Expanded Perspectives. Don't forget, Thursday, Expanded Perspectives Elite. If you'd like to sign up and hear those shows, you can go to our website, expandedperspectives.com. Signing up there is easy. Just click the tab. And for Expanded Perspectives Elite, you get a new episode every single Thursday, as well as access to our entire back catalog. And there's some really cool shows on there. Like recently, we did the Marconi deaths. We had some bizarre encounters during World War II. We did the Bunny Man. We did the cursed atoll of the Palmyra Islands. We did missing treasures of the Third Reich. We did dark intruders. You know, all kinds of stories. If you're a fan of Expanded Perspectives, Expanded Perspectives Elite is exactly the same. It's roughly the same length, about an hour. We do the same topics, the same subjects. There's nothing really different about Expanded Perspectives Elite other than we're not rebroadcast on radio stations. So, you know, we might curse from here to there, or we might elaborate a little bit more, or act a little sillier sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, $5 a month, I mean, that's the price of going to Taco Bell for lunch one day. You could have access to the entire back catalog, as well as a new episode every Thursday. So we'd like to see people over there. If you want to help out the show, you can always go to iTunes and write. You can always write us a review and rate the show for us. That really helps out when other people, new listeners, of course, are searching for, you know, podcasts to do paranormal stories or whatever. Cam, what do you got planned for this week? Anything exciting?
No, this is one of those deals that we're kind of back in the groove now. We're not going to be off work. No extra days off between now and I guess the spring break. So everybody's got to get back in the groove and kind of get back to going. So you just kind of put your head down and trudge forward. That's pretty much it. I think I'm fixing to do a bathroom remodel in my house.
Well, that sounds like fun. Yeah.
I love building things and always working and building stuff around the house, but the remodel stuff, you know, it never works out right whenever you start and you start redoing it. And I'm talking about I'm fixing to redo all my water lines and things like that. And yes, folks, I do it all myself. So I'm one of those guys. I can't stand to think about how, and I can do it. I've done it before. I just can't think of, I can't stand the idea of hiring someone to do something that I know I can do. So I'm like, all right, here we go. So I've got a lot of work to do coming up. So,
man, if anybody's on the northeast coast of the United States and being hit with this blizzard and floods and stuff, please be careful.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it
stay
is
warm.
Incredible. I have family that just flew in actually like a day before it hit from New Jersey.
And boy, are their arms tired.
And they were telling me about, you know, they were showing me pictures and stuff of, you know, over 2.5 feet of snow in like 24 hours. And the because of the full moon, the tides had risen and like washed out. I have a cousin that lives on the Jersey Shore, and a lot of it was washed away again, you know. It seemed like they had just repaired everything from Hurricane Sandy. Now
right.
It's getting washed out again. So please be careful if you're out there. I saw a bunch of pictures. Have you seen this where there's people with snowboards being pulled up and down the
streets?
Downtown
Square.
Manhattan and
yes,
stuff.
Yes, yes.
I mean, that kind of stuff is fun. And I'm sure the kids enjoy being out of school and playing in the snow. But, you know, it can also, there's a lot of people that can be injured and stuff from, you know, the icy roads and the flooding and things like that. So please be careful.
If you didn't have, your heater goes out. I mean, yeah. So you have, if you know of any old folks or anything like that, make sure to check on some people. Check on your neighbors. You know, if you feel, now be careful driving. You may want to get out and snowshoe it up or whatnot. But yeah, this is when it's time for everybody to pull together with one another. Make sure to check on each other.
Yeah, I agree. Well, everybody at Expanded Perspectives Elite will speak to you on Thursday. Everybody else, have a good week. Don't work too hard. And we will talk to you next Monday. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace.